It's finally time for a Canadian-centric video. After all this time, I know there's been a lot of demand for certain Canadian topics in recent months. I've seen all those comments, so let's get right to it. After all, a giant truck is headed our way right now, and wouldn't you know it, it's full of medical supplies. What do you think I was going to talk about today? I had a conversation with my dry bread a year or two ago, where we briefly talked about the ethics of euthanasia. I pointed out in that conversation that while as a self-owned individual you do have the right to take your own life, if you create an institution around legal suicide, you create the possibility for perverse incentives. I described to him a hypothetical future where an old man who was a member of a poor family, rather than become a financial burden on the medical system during the final years of his life, the government offers him the chance of euthanasia and his family gets a cash payout. The point I was making was, if you legalize something, a necessary part of that process is creating incentives for it. This is one of the stronger arguments against the legalization of recreational drugs. Even if a person who's doing drugs and committing no other bad actions is ultimately committing a victimless crime, making the drug use legal has downstream consequences. People who would commit other crimes while high now have easier access. People who wouldn't do drugs if they remained illegal now might do them. The culture shifts towards permissibility of something that really isn't that good for you. And most importantly for this conversation, now there's a new financial motive for more people to get into the drug market. Legalizing almost anything leads to new incentives. In Canada, MAID, Medical Assistance in Dying, became legal in 2016 to end the suffering of terminally ill adults. After a 2015 legal decision from the Supreme Court, that case, Carter versus Canada 2015, revolved around Kay Carter, who was a victim of degenerative spinal stenosis, and another woman, Gloria Taylor, a victim of amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. The ruling gave Canadian adults who are mentally competent and suffering intolerably and endurably the right to a doctor's assistance in dying. The original 2016 MAID legislation specifically disallowed assisted death on the grounds of mental illness, long-term disability, or any curable condition, and did not make euthanasia available to minors. In 2021, the legislation was amended to allow for death on the grounds of mental illness, and relaxed other stipulations, giving Canada the most permissive assisted suicide laws in the world. Nonetheless, the law only applies to Canadians, to prevent suicide tourism. As per the letter of the law, patients who qualify must sign a written request expressing their wishes to end their life in front of one independent witness who can confirm it was done willingly free of coercion. Then, two medical personnel must confirm their own written agreement that the patient's condition is in an advanced state of irreversible decline, and that the patient is capable and willing of receiving euthanasia. The 2021 amendment added that if the patient's death is not reasonably foreseeable in the future, another expert in the underlying condition also needs to sign off. As a safeguard against abuse, none of the witnesses or physicians involved can have any legal or financial interest in the outcomes of the patient. The patient must repeatedly express consent, not just imply it, including at the moment before their death. Consent can be revoked at any time in any way. There are no consequences for revoking consent, and no limits on how many attempts you can make. These all seem like reasonable safeguards, especially since, in the absence of them, you'd probably see a lot more abuse of the system. And also because people who kill themselves outside the system also have infinite chances to do so. I personally think that while you do have the right to kill yourself, in almost all situations you shouldn't. And society is made worse the more permissive exercising that right becomes. I do like the letter of the initial law as it reads, though I think the continued easing of restrictions over time is quite bad. It's important, though, to look at how the law actually functions in reality. Over this past summer, the claim that MAID is the sixth leading cause of death as the poor and disabled begin to check out of Canadian life went viral online. This claim was roundly debunked by the fact-checkers over at AFP, who said that the MAID program is not a cause of death, but rather a manner of death. Well, that's a great distinction, but it kinda sidesteps the criticism, doesn't it? The core of the issue is whether or not Canada is euthanizing poor people. It's one thing to say my condition is irreversible and I'd rather be dead. It's another thing entirely to say I would rather keep living but it's too expensive so I might as well die. It seems like the line that all of those safeguards was meant to guard against was quickly crossed by the Canadian government anyway. I know what you might be thinking. Canada's got universal healthcare. The wait times might be bad, yeah, but at least all your shit is paid for. In America, if you can't afford care, you just go bankrupt or die without any help. In Canada, that financial incentive is taken out of the equation. That is the argument that a lot of pro-universal healthcare people make on this topic, the removal of the financial incentive. I still think that goal is achievable, at least somewhat, but Canada's done it so poorly that at least on this topic, you might as well have no help at all. Check out these examples and you'll see what I mean. This testimony was given in Parliament on November 10th, 2020. My name is Roger Foley. I'm 45 years old. I was born with spinocerebellar ataxia, which is a severe neurodegenerative disease. With the assisted dying regime in Canada, I have experienced the lack of care and assistance I need to live. I have been denied food and water. I have not been assisted to transfer, take my medications, and go to the bathroom. I have been abused and berated because I have disabilities and told my needs are too much work. My life has been devalued. I have been coerced into assisted death by abuse, neglect, lack of care, and threats. For example, at a time when I was advocating for assistance to live and for self-directed home care, the hospital ethicist and nurses were trying to coerce me into an assisted death by threatening to charge me $1,800 per day or force discharge me without the care I needed to live. I felt pressured by these staff raising assisted dying rather than relieving my suffering with dignified and compassionate care. Hospital staff failed to provide me with the necessities of life. I was starved and denied water for up to 20 days. An expert who reviewed the case concluded a failure to provide necessities of life and gross negligence. Foley leaked a recording to the Canadian press of doctors trying to get him on board with euthanasia.
Roger Foley went from being active and healthy to disabled and helpless because of a rare neurological disease. For the past 2.5 years, he's been in hospital in London, Ontario, part of a healthcare standoff. He wants assisted home care. Instead, he says he's being offered a medically assisted death.
I have not received the care that I need to relieve my suffering and only been offered assisted dying.
And Foley is releasing audio tapes he took of what he says are two healthcare workers who keep raising that option when he talks about getting home care teams of his choosing.
Like if I had self-directed funding, then I'd be fine, but...
But if you weren't, you can just apply to get assisted. If you want it in your life, like, you know, I mean, you don't have to do it in some dramatic manner. You can apply for assisted, you know.
In the second, Foley is told he will be charged more than $1,500 a day if he doesn't go home, with the suggestion he can apply for the right to die.
What's the plan that you know of?
Roger, this is not my show. I told you my piece of this was to talk to you about if you had interest in assisted dying.
In essence, the tape speaks about encouraging him or asking him if he's interested in assisted dying rather than working with him to provide the services that he needs.
And he's not the only one. A woman in Ontario chose MAID after failing to get affordable housing. The logic the medical system used to approve her was that the house she was stuck in was not free of cigarette smoke and chemical cleaners, making her diagnosed extreme sensitivity to chemicals in an advanced state of irreversible decline. She posted a video a week before her death where she said, "The government sees me as expendable trash, a complainer, useless, and a pain in the ass." Another woman applied to die because her medical problems required dietary restrictions that she couldn't afford, and COVID lockdowns ended her ability to make money. She's not the only person who blamed COVID restrictions. Another woman, this one from Vancouver, said the same thing. A third woman, suffering from a concussion, had her care so postponed by COVID shutdowns that her condition exacerbated to the point that her personality drastically changed. She became irritable, unpredictable, and unable to focus. She also ended up getting euthanized, and the family has brought charges against the government, claiming that she clearly did not have the capacity to consent based on her condition. Another man chose death because the quality of government healthcare was so poor, he viewed euthanasia as preferable. When his family arrived at the long-term care facility to be with him during his final moments, they found a room full of trash, piss and shit on the floor, and mold on the walls and in the sink. Family members claimed that their shoes were sticking to the floor as they walked through the room. Several photos were released to the press of the state of the room, but one photo wasn't, out of respect for the victim. It showed him lying in a bed filled with his own filth, unable to help himself. Another man had his story go viral recently, even though it happened several years ago. He had some medical issues, but none of them were life-threatening. In June of 2019, he was hospitalized, seemingly against his will, over fears he might be suicidal. While he was stuck there, he asked his brother to come bust him out. But within a month of his stay, he had submitted a request to be euthanized, claiming only one health condition as the reason, hearing loss. A suicidal man, stuck in a medical system that permits suicide, maybe even advocates for suicide, ends up committing suicide. Another story went viral around the same time, this time of a Canadian veteran who was suffering from PTSD and a brain injury due to his service. Somebody who was not at all suicidal was approached with an offer of euthanasia unprompted. This event caused such an outrage that Veterans Affairs Canada admitted publicly that the offer was inappropriate and that appropriate administrative action will be taken in response. A mother with a 25-year-old daughter who had several debilitating medical conditions was told out of the blue by a doctor that assisted suicide is now legal in Canada. She was shocked and refused, upon which the doctor called her selfish. The patient overheard the conversation and claims to be quite traumatized by the exchange. Another man, this one with ALS, chose to die because he claimed the long-term care facility was treating him poorly. He instead opted to go back home and die with his family. Two other people, one with muscular dystrophy and another with cerebral palsy, said the government healthcare available to them is so poor they feel pushed into euthanasia. And perhaps most egregiously is the case of a man who was approved for euthanasia whose only problem was depression, a condition well known for having suicidal ideation as a symptom. Despite the claim that universal healthcare removes the financial incentive from the equation, a lot of the conversations all of these people had with the medical system revolved around resources. Either they were threatened with outrageous additional fees not covered by the program if they didn't comply, or they were told that they would be selfish in sucking up resources. And this focus on the money is echoed in the October 2020 cost estimate for MAID. Under the 2016-era MAID rules, the government saved $86.9 million implementing euthanasia programs rather than caring for people until their natural end of life. But the 2021 expansion of the program was estimated to save an additional $62 million. This idea that it's only private business that cares about money, and governments would never cut corners to save a buck, even if it means acting unethically, is just ridiculous. We've got to ask the question, how the hell did we get here? Well, I'm going to go down a little bit of a conspiracy rabbit hole on this one. I don't know if this is what happened, but there is at least some circumstantial evidence. The 2021 expansion of the MAID program, the requirement that was designed to stop people from getting euthanized unless they had a debilitating, deteriorating condition that was never getting better, that was taken out in response to two lawsuits. The first one is Truchon versus Canada 2019 in Quebec. Oh god, I'm gonna butcher every French name in this. Where the judge ruled that the clause violated the charter guarantee of equal protection under the law. The judge presiding over that case was Justice Christine Baudouin? I don't know. It's a French name. Her father, Jean-Louis, has long been an advocate of unfettered euthanasia access, going back decades, though his writings on this topic are almost entirely in French. Considering one of her father's lifelong political goals is unfettered euthanasia access, a goal she seems to share, she may have been too biased to judge in a case on that very same topic. The second case is the precursor to the one that I spoke at the beginning of this video, Carter versus Canada 2012, where the judge, Lynn Smith, gave a similar ruling. The plaintiff was represented by the BCCLA, the British Columbia Civil Liberties Association. Lynn Smith is a former board member of the BCCLA before becoming a judge, and at the time of the trial, Smith's daughter was working with the BCCLA as a legal counsel. Her daughter wasn't, on paper, the lead legal counsel for the Carter v. Canada 2012 case, but she was the lead legal counsel for all the other BCCLA cases happening at the same time, most notably a case regarding the rights of sex workers in British Columbia. It's entirely possible that Smith's ruling was biased based on her own past association with the BCCLA, as well as the fact that her own daughter stood to gain from a win. The government appealed Carter versus Canada 2012, where Smith's decision was overturned. The BCCLA also appealed, leading to Carter versus Canada 2015. The judge of that case, Chief Justice Beverly McLaughlin, has a long friendship with the president and director of the BCCLA, Lindsay Leister.
And we keep in touch with our law clerks, and every 5 years we have a law clerks reunion, and now I've been there so long, there are hundreds of them.
Moreover, she has a personal attachment to the idea of euthanasia after her husband asked her for help to end his life long before this became a legal issue, something she admitted to in her memoir.
The British Columbia Court of Appeal had rejected Sue's claim to assisted suicide, and she appealed to the Supreme Court of Canada. As the hearing date approached, I worried whether I was still too close to Rory's death to sit on the case. I went to see my Chief Justice, now Antonio Lemaire. He had replaced Brian Dixon as Chief Justice when Brian retired in the spring of 1990. I'm not sure I should sit on this case, I said. I do not have settled views on the outcome, but I feel very close to it after what you went through with Rory, he interrupted. I nodded. You should not let that stop you from sitting, he said. Judges are human beings. They bring their life experiences to the cases they decide. One morning, as he lay in his bed in our home, he asked a special thing of me, to give him the morphine we had been doling out drop by drop in a single massive dose. I want to die now, he said. Tears in my eyes, I left the room. I could not do it. I had always thought of myself as gutsy. I had never shrunk from unpleasant things, but this I knew in my heart I could not do, because it was against the law, because I could not physically bring myself to do it. Racked by guilt at failing my husband's last request, I wept in a hospital chair while Rory was in the adjoining treatment room. A doctor found me, and I told him everything. I can't do it, I whispered. The doctor did not judge. Then you shouldn't do it, he said. Remember, you will go on. You have to live with yourself after. And then he added, we'll do what we can. Were the treatments that followed only for pain, or did they shorten the remaining days of his life? I didn't know, and I didn't ask. All I knew was that the pain lessened, and Rory passed away peacefully.
She dissented to a previous euthanasia ruling, Rodriguez versus British Columbia in 1993, and then cited her own dissent in her ruling of Carter versus Canada 2015. It is also possible, like with Smith, McLaughlin was biased in her ruling, both in terms of her preconceived notions on the topic, which may or may not be a problem, but also in her personal relationships with the BCCLA, which is absolutely a problem. And to bring us back around to the start of the video, where I told my dry bread that legalizing a thing creates incentives, we are now actually approaching that point. Though the incentive isn't exactly financial, doctors are beginning to talk about euthanasia by organ donation, where the law does away with the safeguard that a person has to be dead before organs are harvested. Their idea is, if a person requests to die, doctors should euthanize them by removing their still living organs, increasing the chances of a successful transplant.
The fact that one of the medical objectives in the debate, I think, is to sort out when we can retrieve organs from donation helps us understand this values component of the ontological question. I mean, we're so invested in this dead donor rule, and I think that over time that rule has become so ingrained in the medical community that we hold it out as a foundational principle, not only a rule, but a value. And I think just as likely there are people who question that value now. And I know there's perhaps not an appetite to go there, but raising the question, is the dead donor rule even relevant? I think there are some who might want to say, as I think back to other contentious debates in the past few years and then where we're going with medical assistance in dying, the best use of my organs if I'm going to receive a medically assisted death might be to not first kill me and then retrieve my organs, but to have my mode of death, as we medically consider death now, to be to retrieve my organs.
In principle, I am still ultimately pro-euthanasia, because obviously you have the right to kill yourself. Not just because you're terminally ill, but even for a stupid reason if you want. It always sounded dumb to me when governments make suicide illegal. It's like, what could you possibly punish them with, a death sentence? But the reason it's illegal is to give the state legitimate pathways of interference with a suicide in progress. The rights conversation lands on the side of the individual to do what they want with their life, including ending it. But there seems to be a bunch of bad actors circling like vultures who have something to gain from making suicide more permissive. As the Canadian state begins to enshrine the right to euthanasia and begins to slowly pick apart the reasonable gatekeeping measures on that right, we're starting to see these perverse incentives pop up, the end result of a group of people who are ideologically inclined to profit off the death of others. It may not strictly be financial profit, like with American Big Pharma jacking up the prices of simple drugs, but it's profit nonetheless. I predict that we're going to hear many more stories of people being told that they're selfish for being a burden and sucking up more healthcare instead of just dying as ordered, until the general public begins to realize exactly what type of a hole we've dug ourselves by allowing the state to have a moral stake in our health. Though universal healthcare can be good, the ultimate downside of such a system is that it's no longer your say whether or not your care gets funded, it's the government's. Before, you could get all the care you wanted if you paid for it, and yeah, that sucks people who can't pay. But now, your life continues at the whim of a bureaucrat who does not give a shit about you.